All right, guys, welcome back to the Coach's Corner podcast. Joe McDonough here. You can follow me on Twitter at @Joe_McDonough6. We are presented by MMAProspects.com, finding tomorrow's stars today. You can check out the great team over at MMAProspects.com on the site. I'm joined back after a little hiatus to start the great 2021 year, get rid of 2020. I am joined by the great John Crouch over at the MMA Lab in Arizona. John, how are you?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, for anyone looking to see former episodes, you know, we've had Dean Thomas, James Krause, Tyson Chartier, Eric Nixick, and Mark Montoya. You know where to find those. And I'm glad to join, John, to have you on to hear even more about, you know, the great minds of MMA. And you're obviously one of them. So I appreciate the time.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
For those of you that don't know, we have five rounds. The first four rounds are 10 minutes each, and then that fifth round is a hobby-based round. So let's start. Let's throw 10 minutes on the clock for round number one. So at over at the MMA Lab, one of the most famous fighters, you know, I think when you think of mixed martial arts, this is a name that comes to mind, is Mr. Benson Henderson. You know, obviously over in Bellator now, last fought, coming off a little bit of a losing streak, but still nothing can take away from his accomplishments. Obviously, you know, UFC champion and a Bellator champion. So talk to me about having a guy like Benson Henderson in the gym.
Ben's always been such a great leader, such a great teammate. You know, he's always available for people and he's always led by example. You know, he's the hardest working dude in the gym and he never jerks. And so, you know, when guys see, you know, they try to see what it takes, they can just stare right at Benson and follow what he does. And he's always been that kind of guy.
And when he's around the youth, we're going to talk a lot about the youth of the gym, you know, as we love to talk about the prospects, the next up and comers, having a guy like Benson around is almost like having an extra coach in there, I'm assuming.
Yeah. You know, Ben is, as he got older, you know, and more in his career, he's become a little bit more vocal as a leader, but most of the time he just is always doing the things you're supposed to do. You know, he's always putting his nose to the grindstone and getting it done. So yeah, he's a big influence on the younger fighters.
Obviously, we just saw, you know, he's fought Michael Chandler twice. We just saw Michael Chandler's debut in the UFC. What did you think about that?
I kind of thought that's what was going to happen. I think, Michael's one of the scariest guys we've ever had to prepare for. And, you know, we went to a split decision with him on the first time and kind of thought he won the fight. Obviously, you know, biased opinions being what they are. Mm-hmm. But he's a very hard person to deal with. He's so athletic. He carries power in both hands. He can wrestle. He can strike. So, I had him winning that fight in my mind, and it kind of, it went a little faster than I thought it was going to go, but that's what I thought would happen.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's always been this discrepancy between Bellator and UFC. You know, UFC always kind of denounces them, you know, and even this week it was weird. You know, you'd hear, they wouldn't even mention Bellator's name until, and then you hear Bruce Buffer say former Bellator champion. And I was like shocked sitting there watching the fights, you know, with Benson being in both sides and you being in his corner on both, you know, is there as much of as this gap between UFC and Bellator as the UFC likes to think there is? Because I don't think there is.
You know, I don't know if you remember when before the WC came together with the UFC and Pettis, Benson, and Cerrone and Jamie Varner, and they always used to talk about how the WC guys couldn't hang with the UFC guys, I never understood that. Because they all train together anyway, all those guys are training the same places. So when they say that about Bellator, it's ridiculous. I mean, obviously the UFC is the deepest; they have the most. But both Pitbull brothers are badasses. You know, Michael Chandler is a badass. Benson is a badass. Like you can't get; they're not better fighters than those guys. So, you know, the top five in the UFC, those guys are awesome. So it's not a disrespect to them to say that there's other good fighters in the world. But, yeah, it's kind of silly And I think people that know and have been around don't really buy into that too much.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree. I agree 100% with that. Another fighter I want to talk about is Jared Cannonier. You know, obviously preparing for Robert Whittaker. I mean, talk to me about that. Obviously, since he's moved up to 185, been an absolute monster, you know, having a guy like that in the gym.
Boy, he's another one that just gets after it and gets better every day. And I just love having him around. Even now, you know, as he's healing, he's been in the gym, putting on his gi, doing jiu-jitsu classes, you know, really like taking care of his arm, but working on his footwork and shadow boxing, lifting with his lower body. He's doing everything he can to improve even now. So, man, I love the guy, and he's a great fighter. I think we're just starting to scratch the surface what he can do.
And for a guy to be, you know, injured and still be in the gym on a daily basis, like you said, he's resting the arm, but he's doing jiu-jitsu, he's doing footwork, he's doing this, he's doing cardio. You know, obviously we know Jared's a special athlete and a world-class athlete and possibly a future champion. But to kind of watch it on a daily basis, does it just kind of remind you of how special this guy is?
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, fighters at an elite level are special people. And it takes a remarkable person to get in there and do the things that they have to do. You know, there's no off season in the fight game. Like every day is another day. You don't get, you know, you don't get January to June off and then you get to go to work. So, yeah, he's a special guy and he's a special competitor. When he steps in the ring, you really feel Jared's presence. He's a remarkable dude.
And obviously with the Whittaker announcement, not announcement, but the rumors that Paulo Costa versus Robert Whittaker, you know, as someone who just helped prepare his fighter for the former champ in Robert Whittaker, how do you see that one going?
Well, I think it's a great matchup. You know, always kind of risky to call fights. You know how it is. I don't know what your
record
is. I've gone 12-0 on cards, and then the next week I go 0-12 on cards. So I was – obviously, Costa, his most recent performance has shown some things you can attack, and I think those are certainly things that Whittaker does well. I was super impressed with how quick Robert was. I think it was a surprise. Not a surprise. We thought he would be quick, but he was even quicker than that when we fought him. So I was super impressed. So – you know, I like Robert. He's a champion. You know, he's been a champion. And I would give him the edge, but, man, Costa's a monster.
Speaking of, you know, going 12-0 and then 0-12 with this pass card with, you know, I picked nearly went 0 for, you know, 8 and then, you know, 1 on the Poirier. So I feel like I saved my night there. But, you know, but I completely understand, you know, fighting, you never know what's going to happen. You know, and then you got the puncher's chance and everything. Another guy that over at the MMA Lab that has a lot of people buzzing about is Casey Kenney. And obviously he has the former champion, arguably the as of right now, the 135 GOAT. You know, obviously that's up for debate. But, you know, someone who has accomplished a ton over at the bantamweight division in Dominick Cruz. So, you know, what's it like to prepare for, you know, I mean, like you said, you just prepared for Robert Whittaker, now you're preparing Dominick Cruz, you know, these former champions that are at such an elite level.
Yet I don't think it's arguable Dominick's the GOAT. Like, how do you argue that? Like, that guy owned that division for so many years, came back from catastrophic knee surgeries, and performed at the highest level you can possibly perform. The only person he lost to is a two-division champion. Like, he came back and lost to Cejudo. Like, Dominick is still such a smart guy, such a great MMA mind. And to prepare for those guys is awesome because we do perform at the top levels of the game. You don't do this for the very first amateur fight, right? You do it, you build, and I like those. Some of those are my favorite fights. Is a guy's breaking out his entrance. But ultimately, you want to be the best in the world. And if you don't, you shouldn't. You should do something else. So I love that we're preparing for Dominick Cruz, and it's scary, and it's awesome, and it's, you know, like, challenge, and I love it. I can't. I think Casey's going to fight for the title, so I'm excited for all those challenges.
And, you know, the bantamweight division, I think, is one of the top, if not the top division in the UFC. And Casey Kenney, obviously, is one of those names. You know, he's 5-1 in the UFC, obviously, won through the light LFA, you know, ranks. is, I think Dominic Cruz, although he's fought some, you know, great fighters, is the biggest test. Like you said, it's probably not arguable that he is the 135 GOAT. How do you, at 29 years old, kind of keep his head at Dominic Cruz is just another man, just another guy that you're fighting, you know, and leave behind the, you know, former champion, GOAT, all that talk?
I think Casey is one of the best competitors I've ever met. He is, he does not care who you are or what you've done. If you tell him he's going to fight King Kong in a phone booth in 5 minutes, he'll be down. Will not hesitate. Like, he is a 100% natural born killer as a competitor. So he's not scared of anything. And he, you know, we're all fans. How can you not be a fan of Dominic Cruz? Like, guy's done so much stuff. So it's certainly an exciting challenge, but it's a challenge that we feel like we're going to be conquer. So it's good to have healthy respect. You never want to look past somebody. And Dominic's great. And that idea that there's danger, and it's like Casey told me today, he's like, man, I jump out of bed in the morning. I can't wait. These are that's why I did MMA. And so for him, it's not hard. There's no disrespect and no looking past it, but it certainly is a challenge he looks forward to.
A lot of excitement for that one. And for us fans, there's even more excitement. That brings us to the end of round number one. Let's catch it on round number two. All right, we're here at the start of round number two. So in your background, you know, tell us a little bit about your background in mixed martial arts. You know, you spent time with the Gracies, obviously BJJ royalty. You know, tell us a little bit about your background before getting to this point as a head coach over at MMA Lab.
As a kid, I boxed a little bit and I wrestled a little bit, just enough to be terrible. I always liked to roughhouse. And when I was a little older, my mom got me a Christmas present from me, my girlfriend and I, at a taekwondo school. And I'd always wanted to do martial arts. I was kind of a country boy. So I lived up on a ranch, and so it was hard get anywhere to do stuff, you know. And so she bought a gift and I loved it. Turns out my instructor was a combatives instructor in the Rangers, and he was a sheriff and he ran their training. He went to the Gracie Academy and he brought back jiu-jitsu, and I fell in love with it. So once I started getting strangled by all these little guys, I had to see where it was coming from. So my brother lived in Orange County at the time, and I moved there for the summer and trained at the Gracie Academy every day, four times a day, and loved it, applied to their instructor's program. And that's when I started really going. So I have a black belt in taekwondo. I wrestled and boxed a little bit. And then I got my black belt in jiu-jitsu.
And how special is it not only kind of look back and see who you learned that stuff from? Because, I mean, like I said, the Gracies are, you know, a royalty in MMA. But also to have your black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you know, along the way. Because obviously that is, you know, one of the highest honors in MMA.
Yeah, I think I love Jiu-Jitsu. You know, I wish now, looking back, I love it so much. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Being in the same room, you know, Elio lived in L.A. when I was there. So I took, 100, 200 classes with Elio Gracie. And how cool is that? That's not something.
Yeah.
And then Jorian Gracie is the best teacher I've ever seen teach anything in my life. And then Hoist Gracie is the original warrior, you know, the guy 170 pounds stepping in there with guys that are twice his body weight to fight him. So I feel really blessed that I could. I was just lucky. It was dumb luck. And I'm really glad that I could be there, and I feel honored to be part of what they've done, you know? So go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. And so what would you say you've brought to from the Gracie Academies to MMA Lab in your own coaching style?
The way that I was taught jiu-jitsu, it's about defending yourself first and not tapping, right? Elio, my favorite sayings that Elio used to say all the time, he's like, hey, listen, if you can't lose, there's only one option, and that's to win, you know? And he wouldn't say mm-hmm. that, but he said, there's only one option. And it kind of always, the old man got, like, I'd get a tingle down my spine every time he'd say it. And so, and that's not modern MMA, but my approach is to be defensive mind, like, don't get hurt, you know, don't get tapped, and you'll eventually find a way to conquer whoever's in front of you. You know, the new modern game is so dynamic. I'd say I'd started there, but I love everything. I love wrestling. I wish I'd wrestled more. I wish I had known about wrestling when I was a kid more. But my wrestlers at the place, like they teach me a lot every day. I'm still learning wrestling and how to adapt that mm-hmm. striking. I love the whole aspect and the challenge of combining all the elements together.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like what you said about how MMA is, you know, an ever-changing game. And you as, you know, a head coach over at, you know, one of the top gyms in the world is still learning yourself on a daily basis, which is pretty special. So, you know, I always love this part of the show where I talk to the coaches and kind of get the perspective. And I ask the same question every time. What makes your gym different? But every time I get a different answer. You know, sometimes I hear about culture. Sometimes I hear about the regiment. Sometimes I hear about the, you know, the chemistry in the gym when you walk in the door. What would you say makes the MMA lab different?
I would start by saying that every gym is different, you know, and in slightly mm-hmm. different ways. And I would say it's always culture. Like if, say, some head coach is like, oh, it's our regimen. Well, that's your culture. The discipline is part of mm-hmm. the culture built. It's hard to say. Like, I think that we're special, but all those gyms are great. There's so many good gyms and so many good coaches, you know. I would say that our emphasis is about working hard together. Like, our thing is about team and family and just putting in the time, like, not to be outworked. And that's what's important to us, and that's what our culture is about. We're there for each other. We're there to work for each other. So I wouldn't say it, you know, is different than anybody else. Maybe the way we do it is special for us, but that's what's important to us. And that's what we emphasize as we go about our work.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the chemistry, the team, the togetherness over at MMA Lab. Obviously, you have, you know, a range from, you know, some of the fighters we talked about that are competing for, you know, very close to titles, you know, competing against former champions, you know, our former champions and mentioned with some of the greats. And then you've got, I'm sure, amateurs and prospects walking in the door. To have that mix, you know, how good is it for the gym and the chemistry of the gym to have the mix of kind of the I don't want to say the fresh blood, but the new guys and the guys that have been around and are there for you to watch and lead by example?
Yeah, I think it's one of the things I'm really proud of, and that we've taken a bunch of people from their amateur career, built mm-hmm. them through their pro career, and gotten them into the UFC. And that's happened a lot for us. And that makes me, that's one of the things I'm the most proud of. So I think the culture of having the youngsters, you know, the beginners, like just starting MMA, to be in there with the people that are very experienced, I think it's super important, because the young guys give the veterans the work they need. The veterans, while they're dishing out beatings on the young guys, give those guys the lessons they need to learn, an example that needs to follow. I think it's just in any culture, in any team, in any society, it's always that way. The older, more experienced people, they're better at whatever they do, and they teach the younger people, and the younger people support until it's their time to take over and become a leader. So I feel like in any culture, whether you're talking about gym cultures or work cultures or school cultures, that's mm-hmm. a super important element. And it certainly is an important element in our team and our gym.
And there's something special about watching a guy go from, you know, it's like when I talked to Dean Thomas with Tyron Woodley, he watched him from when he was an amateur to becoming a world champion and defending world titles. When you have that, do you ever kind of look back as you're, is it something you look back on after the fact, or is it something that you can look back on while you're doing it? Like this kid essentially walked in my door as an amateur, and now here he is signing with the UFC, or here he is in his UFC debut, or fighting a world champion next.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I think about it all the time. I think about it every day. I don't know if you're a dad, But when I look at my kids, I see them as babies, even though they're big now, you know, like I remember all those moments. So with a fighter, they're not children, obviously, but I remember them. Like I coached Benson the first time I ever met him. I didn't know him. I cornered him for, you know, Lester Bowling used to be the head coach of the Elevation Fight Team, a good friend of Ben's and a friend of mine. And I was cornering Alvin Robinson, which is another great beginning to UFC story. But he asked me, hey, I can't be here. Can you corner this guy named Ben Henderson? And I didn't really, it's hard to corner people you don't know, you know, like,
yeah.
How are you going to help the people? And I always feel a sense of responsibility, like, man, I would help, but man, I don't want to just be there. And I'm like, yeah, you know, for you, I'll do it. It was Benson. How crazy is that?
That is insane.
I remember going out there and we lost the fight and I didn't even know what he was good at. I turned around to a good friend of his and I'm like, hey, what does he do? And in the middle of the fight, I was like, we were losing. I go, what does he do? He wrestles. I go, wrestle.
That is great.
You know, and then standing there in Japan when Dana was wrapping the belt around Ben's waist, all of that came back to my mind every single second of it. I think it's a normal part to reflect on always.
Mm-hmm. And what a wild that is a party story right there. I mean, to go from who is this guy and what does he do good? Yeah. All right, wrestle. Then fast forward to becoming a, you know, a multiple time champion. That is special. That brings us to the end of round number two. Let's catch it in round number three. So round number three, let's throw 10 minutes on the clock. Round number three is one of my favorite rounds when I talk to the coaches, because, you know, as much as I love hearing about stories about Benson Henderson and you know, and Jared Cannonier and all these guys fighting for titles or former champions and all of this stuff, I love to hear about, like, what you just told me. Benson Henderson fighting, you know, before anyone knew who he was, you barely knew who he was, and then working his way up to that level. So tell me and name drop whoever you want. Tell me about all of them. Take the whole 10 minutes to talk about it. Doesn't matter to me. Tell me about some prospects that you have your eye on over in the MMA lab.
Gosh, that's always so hard, you know. Obviously, you know, starting with Casey Kenney's no longer a prospect. I mean, he's a two-division champion, 5-1 in the UFC, and he's going to fight Donald Cruz. But I'm really excited about him. He's still a young guy, you know. And Kyler Phillips is going to fight Song Yadong on the same card. Kyler is as talented as anybody I've ever coached. He's dynamic. He can strike. He can wrestle. He's got crazy good jiu-jitsu. And he's just scratching the surface. And then Mario Bautista is also a bantamweight in the UFC at our gym. And he's he has 2-time fight of the night bonuses at bantamweight. And he's just getting started. You know, he got into the UFC a little bit early. And he got to fight Corey Sandhagen in his first fight. And he was, I don't know, 5-1 at the time. And so, or 5-0, and Sandhagen was his first loss. So all three of those guys, those guys are there today. And we have a couple other bantamweights. Marcus McGee is 1-0, and he's a main training partner for those guys. We have another young 35er, Abdul Kamara, moved here. Really good athlete, really talented guy. Excited about him. So, you know, that it's hard to call all of the people out because there are many people working hard, but I am really excited for all those bantamweights. Like, we have Richie Palencia trains with us too. He's 9-0. He's a 35-pounder and he fights in LFA this weekend. Excited about him. So, like, literally on any given day, you know, Tanquinho Mendez is still with us. He fought in the UFC. And so he's in that same, those guys just beating him up. And so that 35-pound lineup is pretty scary over here.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you brought something up that kind of reminded me of a question I had while watching, you know, McGregor-Poirier. And, you know, we'll sway away from the prospects for just a minute and then get back into that. You know, obviously, Mike Brown over at American Top Team, you know, a great coach. As I'm watching, you know, and I've noticed this at Bellator cards that I've covered over the summer, is just when you have like you said, Kyler Phillips is also going to be fighting on that card. When you have multiple people fighting on that card, is it difficult as a coach to, you know, go into someone's corner, go back, get someone else ready for a fight, get back in, get in their corner? Is that difficult as a coach, or is that just part of the job and it doesn't even phase you guys?
I don't think it's hard. I mean, the first time you ever put it feels weird because the UFC is such a special thing, you know, to get a fighter into the UFC. I mentioned Alvin Robinson before. He was my first student. You know, he walked into my jiu-jitsu gym in Denver and I said, "Hey, what do you want to do?" He said, "I want to fight in the UFC." And I was like, "Oh, well, I never did MMA, you know, I didn't know too much," and we did it. So, you know, when he fought, it was like a big deal. The whole community turned out, everything shut down. It's like the movie Hoosiers, the whole town went to see the battle. And then, you know, not too long ago, we had, when Ben fought Rustam Khabilov in New Mexico, we had five guys on that card, and we've had three and four card a bunch of times. So I actually like it because of the, there's so much of the team that gets to go, you know, everybody, it's like bringing the whole gym with you. And I love that. So it's a challenge certainly, but like say Benson will go and he'll bring a training partner, and then this other guy will go and he'll bring a training partner, and Casey Kenney is striking, who's been friends with. So there's a whole, you know, I kind of fit into those groups, and it's awesome. I love it.
And I'm sure there's an extra, like you said, the chemistry in the gym is one of the biggest things for you guys. So I'm sure there's a little extra, you know, motivation when you have a teammate or teammates fighting on that same card as you. You all want to go get that 3-0, you know, MMA Labs 3-0 on this night, all that stuff. I'm sure that adds a little motivation to each fighter.
Yeah, I don't know that it adds it. I think it just feels good. Like, you know, you're comfortable around your guys. If they're not motivated, if you need to be motivated by somebody showing up there, you're probably in the wrong sport.
Yeah.
You know, like you could send those guys alone naked into a snowstorm and they'll fight their ass. So yeah, as far as them being motivated, I don't think that's the case. But it is great to just have, for me as a coach, I love that. I love seeing the guys hang out together, you know, telling lies and spinning stories. And that's the best part of it. So I love that part.
And you've talked about, you know, having guys from the beginning. You know, Sean O'Malley walked into your gym at, you know, I believe age 18. You know, what for you as a coach and someone who's been around for a while is the it factor? I'm sure there really isn't one, but, you know, what is it? Is it a mentality? Is it a physique? And you know, did you see that with Sean O'Malley? Did you see that with Benson Henderson? You know, or do you see that with any guys in the gym right now?
I don't know how you can tell. I don't have a good eye for that. For me, it's just work ethic. You know, like that's what really grabs me. So Sean worked hard. He always did. He still does. You know, he's getting better every day. He's super committed to his career and being an expert at it. And as Ben Henderson is, as Casey Kenney is, as Jerry Cannonier is, you know, as Mario Bautista is, all those guys they're trying to be the best in the world. They're not messing around with doing that. So for me, that's what makes people stand out. I think the it factor depends on other people's opinions, you know, and I can't control that. So maybe I don't pay attention, but I saw Conor McGregor, I think, fight in Cage Warriors, and I thought he was good, but he didn't strike me as somebody who was going to be the media sensation that they were, you know, that he is.
Yeah.
He's a great fighter, so I'm not trying to discount that, but I would have never guessed that. And so I would have never guessed that Sean used to babysit my kids. I have pictures throwing my in the pool. And he's just this kid from Montana, and he was always really tough and really hardworking and talented, but now to see him as the sugar show is kind of weird for me, honestly. Like, and I love it. Like, I hope he keeps going. I hope he makes $1 trillion, and he fights for as long as he wants to. So I'm all for it. I just don't know. I don't know that that's a. If somebody has that ability to spot that, God bless him, because I certainly don't have it.
And the sugar show watching kids, you know, sounds like a good time. And so
over and they'd run around and jump in the pool. And And like, he was just, Sean is a, you know, like he definitely has a persona, but he is a super good guy, and he's a family guy, you know, and like, he was great with my kids. They love him still, you know, and they see him on TV and they love to talk about the sugar show now, but it wasn't the sugar back in the day, or a different kind of sugar show, I guess.
So my last question for here to end round three is, you know, one thing that I always hear with prospects is, you know, and especially this year with, you know, so many regional promotions, not being able to run, like, I'm over here in New England, CES has had one card in the last, you know, year and a half because New England's essentially been shut down. For veterans, and obviously veterans haven't gone through COVID and anything like that, but they've gone through hardships. To have veterans there that have gone through the losses in regional promotions and maybe losing skids or, you know, that type of stuff to kind of keep these prospects going, because they know they've been there and they've made it through it.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just a unique situation for every single person in the world. There's not one person. Like, you can draw parallels all the time. We all been through hard stuff, and you persevere, and all those quotes and words and all that's right. But man, you know, like David Michaud was, he was in the finals for the PFL at 170, and it was his best year, and he was just starting to hit his stride, and he didn't fight for a year. Like, God, you got to be kidding me. And he's David Stoic. You can't throw him off. He's not going to freak out and do anything, but it has so hard, you know, like, you finally made some money fighting, because you know how it is. You come up, you can be really good and fight for the LFA, and you have another job. It takes you're not working at fighting. You know, you spend 50 hours a week fighting, but you don't get paid 50 hours a week for fighting. So for him to finally get money in, and really show people who he is, because what a great human being and a tough guy he is, and then not to fight for that long, God. So it's been hard for the amateurs, but you know, they were fighting for free as it was. They want to perform, but I just feel like I don't know. This is so unique for all of us, that just sticking together and doing the best we can, and you know, like there's gonna be sunshine. You know, it's gonna. Mm-hmm. Peek out from the clouds, but are you going to be, what I say to my guys, are you going to be ready when it comes out? Are you going to be still feeling sorry for yourself, or is your ass going to be the first one in line going, hey, I'll fight this guy, no problem, I'm ready. And so you know, we've tried to treat it like that. Be ready for your opportunities when they come, because they'll come. You just have to be there.
And that brings us to the end of round number three. All right, we're here for round number four. So it's funny you said that at the end, because, you know, on last episode, I was talking with James Krause over at Glory MMA, and he had told me a story about how he had Kevin Kroom sitting there, bag packed in his car for a month, and then suddenly gets the call. They go to the airport. Kevin Kroom asks him at the airport, wait, so who am I fighting? So he, you know, and it seems like that's the same mentality for a lot of people, and including at MMA Lab, is like, whatever happens, yes, it's unique, and yes, it stinks, but we're going to be ready for that next opportunity that shows, whatever it is.
Yeah, I love that. That's what you got to do, and that's what I think, that's what people love, is like, yeah, who is it? Let's do it. And you know, like the whole, when I said Casey Kenney will fight King Kong in a phone booth tomorrow, he would, and he wouldn't even complain about it. He'd do it. And that's, I mean, that's life, man. We got to take our opportunities when they come, and you got to be prepared. So hopefully, you know, in terms of our school and our team, hopefully our amateurs are prepared, you know, and our guys are ready, so that when those opportunities come, they can step up and take the swing.
And with the Ultimate Fighter returning this year, we don't know exactly who the coaches are, when it's going to be. We know it's going to be middleweights, and I believe bantamweights. I could be wrong there. But it's returning, and we obviously have seen Dana White Contender Series and how big and huge that has been. For you as a coach, you know, with fighters that get those opportunities, would you pick one over the other, or is it kind of like what you just said? It's an opportunity. If you're offered it, go.
Yeah, 100%. I never have done that. Usually there's different management teams, and people have different routes. You know, somebody got a call from somebody else, and they don't, like, Sean Shelby doesn't call me and ask me, hey, do you have, who's your best 35er? Who's your best 85er? Yeah. Like, we hear there's a thing for 85. I call whoever. If they're ready, then we go. And mm-hmm. sometimes they're not. And so somebody will step up and take advantage of that.
And it's interesting you said that, because that was another question I was going to bring up in this round, is coaches and managers. Is it always, because I mean, I've talked to a bunch of coaches, I've talked to a bunch of managers. Is it always a smooth sailing ship with a coach and a manager, or is it, and at the end of the day, who do you think that, I'm assuming the fighter trusts that coach more because they're with them on a daily basis, whereas a manager may, you know, call them every week or whatnot.
I suppose it depends on the relationship, you know, like, mm-hmm. If you're married, your relationship with your wife is a certain way, but it's not always smooth. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and so your relationship, like, I like a lot of the managers, super cool guys, and they work really hard to get guys opportunities. So I feel like I have good relationships with them, but I can't say that it's always smooth, you know, like, yeah. I have agreements and things that I don't like, and I'll speak up about it, and they tell me what they think, and then we go from there. So, you know, like all relationships, I think just keeping an honest, open line of communication, you know, saying what you think, and if you're both in it for your guy, for the fighter, it's going to work out just fine. You know,
yeah, I like that. I like that. I like that. I agree.
If they're both, if you guys are fighters, the best they can be and give them the best opportunities they can get, then I think there's really going to be not too many arguments.
And I like that, the, you know, if you're both there for the fighter, then, you know, you guys can agree on whatever's best for that fighter. So we talked about COVID a little bit last round and with the fighters. But one thing I like to ask, cause it's different in every state. You know, when I talked to James Krause last episode, he had told me, to be honest, in Missouri, we don't give a shit. That was his exact, you know, he said, if someone gets it at the gym, they get sent home for 2 weeks. We'll see them again in 2 weeks and one day. For MMA Lab, what has been, A, the toughest thing with COVID, and B, what's your guys' protocols, I guess? Because it seems to be different everywhere.
Well, you know, when they first shut us down, we were practicing in pods, you know, because the gym was closed. Like, everything was mandatorily shut down. So, mm-hmm. I'd have 4 70-pounders together and 4 85ers and these teams. So we were trying to limit contact. And everybody got it anyway at the beginning. So when they opened back up, really Arizona's the same as Missouri. You know, everybody, I think at this point, everybody that does the sport knows everybody's going to get it. You're going to get the virus. No way about it. And so we try to be as we clean and like crazy. We try to keep people separated. Not, you know, we've changed all our starting and ending times, so people are leaving the building at different times. We have limited numbers in our classes. You know, we freaking whatever that chemical fog stuff is, we do that 3-4 times a week. You know, like, we're doing our best, but ultimately it's like, mm-hmm. like James said, you get it. If you don't feel good, go home. We'll see you when you're better. And we don't worry about it too much after that.
Mm-hmm. And is it ever a worry during a fight camp, like a big fight camp, like with Dominic, coming up with Dominic Cruz, is there a worry if someone does get sick that it can spread and ruin a big fight like that?
Yeah, but how do you know? You know, you can get it at the restaurant, yeah. You can get it at Safeway, exactly. You can get it at the gas station. So how do you protect yourself? There's no way that you can train for an MMA fight by yourself in your bedroom. You just can't do it. So what are you going to do, man? We just got to go out and do the best we can. You try to limit the contact and, you know, stay healthy, keep working out, and things are going to work out how they go.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And, you know, when you're in a training camp, something that always interests me is, for certain fighters, is it different? When you're in a camp, is there a time when film is a big focus of that camp versus, you know, your opponent's film, what they are doing, you know, that you can capitalize on? Or is it more so making your fighter at their peak, at their best, at what they do best? Or is it a mixture?
For sure, it's a mixture. And I think it's a mixture depending on your fighter. I think some guys love to watch film. They kind of obsess about it. And for me, I watch early and pick up a couple things that I would like to do and a couple things that I wouldn't like the other guy to do, you know, like not let him. We're going to do this. And then we go to work on making the best version of ourselves. And then I'll watch again a little bit later just to like before we go. So any last minute things maybe I didn't see. But I do think you can get too, I should say you can get too obsessed with it, because if that's an important part of your process, then, you know, that's the way it should be. If you value that. For me, like when Ben fought Pettis in the WC and he fought Frankie for the title, I was watching film on those guys. And then the productivity of what we actually did in the fight was pretty low. Like we didn't do those things. So I had, you know, 10 page scouting reports and I was working my butt off to try to make sure I was watching Mark Henry do interviews. I was watching Frankie's teammates do technique videos, you know, like, I was watching everything I could watch. And then we get to the fight and Ben just fights anyway, and doesn't do any of that talked about. So I do think, you know, and some coaches are really smart. So if that works for them, good. But I think you can get too smart. I think you can tie your athlete up a little bit thinking instead of going out and painting a masterpiece, you know?
And I love that you said that. And, you know, I continue to bring up James Krause, but he was the last episode, so he's fresh in my mind. Is, you know, he said that a lot of times it depends on the athlete. Like you said, you know, if you watch film and you see that, you know, you can mess with this fighter's head by going for an early takedown, it almost becomes an obsession with your fighter. And it takes away from what they're going to do because they think, I have to get the takedown. I have to get the takedown. If it's not there, instead of standing and striking a bit, maybe that's their strength. They're going for that takedown. So, you know, I like what you said when you said it becomes an obsession, because he used the same word.
Yeah. Well, James is a great coach and he's a great fighter. You know, he's a really smart guy. I love watching him coach. I think he's the future of the game. You know, he's going to be around a long time doing great things. So, I just find that you get a little bit crazy with film and you have to perform. Like you have to let the athlete go out and be themselves. So, you know, you want to mitigate the dangerous spots. You want to emphasize your strengths and then let them go and have some fun and have some freedom out there to be themselves. So it's dangerous though. Then you do that and then it doesn't go well. And people are like, oh, this coach sucks, man. He didn't. It's a hard line to walk, but that's how I think about it.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to the end of round number four. We'll catch it for round number five. So round number five here, we just do 5 minutes on the clock here. And I love hearing about MMA, but let's hear about, you know, John outside of MMA. I mean, what are some of your big hobbies?
Dude, I'm in the gym all the dang time. I make myself stay home on Sundays. And like, I like to swim with my kids and hang with my family. We live in a house that we have my in-laws are connected to us and I love them. So, you know, we do family stuff and that's basically it, you know, like we go, you know, go do something and go on a hike or go do something fun with the kids. So I'm as boring and bland as it gets.
Any favorite movies, any other sports that you like?
You know, I used to love to watch movies, but now that COVID hit, like I haven't been to a theater in so long, I don't even know.
Yeah.
but since like we've done some movies at home, I used to be a super football fan, like crazy. When I was a kid, my parents didn't like me to watch football. My stepmother didn't dig it. And so like football, come on. I was the biggest Cowboys fan you've ever seen in your life. And they wouldn't let me watch. I would listen to it on the radio and I would literally tape it on my tape player. And I'd listen to it through the week. I'd listen to the game over and over again. I loved it. So I still like to watch football a little bit. But honestly, when the Cowboys signed Terrell Owens, I stopped. I threw my Cowboys gear out and I stopped watching football for a few years. I
couldn't do it?
No, man, no. He loves him some him, and I don't love me some.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Two things that don't mix. All right. So let's talk about our recent fight cards then. You got 3 minutes on the clock. What would you say was the most impressive performance? So, you know, the three that obviously come to mind is Max Holloway. You know, I'm a Boston guy. I'll never root against Max Holloway, but obviously I was cheering for Calvin Kattar. I've watched him on the regional scene. I've covered him on the regional scene. I'm good friends with Tyson Chartier. You know, I was rooting for him. Nobody makes Calvin Kattar look like that. Then you've obviously got Dustin Poirier and, you know, doing what he did to Conor McGregor, and Michael Chandler doing what he did to Dan Hooker in his UFC debut. Which one stands out most to you?
I'm a huge Max Holloway fan. Like, that kid is, he's a good dude, man. I really like him. And he was always a fan of Benson's. We met him early when he came in and he was super cool. They went to the lab a couple of times and, you know, not to train, but because they were traveling for fights, you know, they came for the UFC, came for WC. And so I love him, but it was remarkable how he was able to do that. And you know, you expected Calvin to get going at some point in time, he just never could. So honestly, for me, I feel like that was the most remarkable performance. I wasn't surprised by Michael Chandler's. I kind of not, you know, I miss as many fights as I get. Like, I don't have a great predictive ability, but I kind of thought it would look like that, you know, just a little later. And then I kind of thought Conor got tired too quick. And I honestly had thought Dustin gets hit, and he got hit with a couple of good left hands in that fight. And I thought maybe Conor's power would be too much early. And then as the fight wore on, that's how I kind of thought about it. But yeah. Conor fired 2 minutes in, and it was it looked easy for Dustin. Now, maybe that was just because he performed so well. You know, you don't want to take it away from that guy because he's a great guy and an animal too. So stands out the most.
And we, you know, we've only got a minute left, but you know, when you said like Max Holloway came into the gym, how cool is it to have, you know, other fighters come in, and whether they're cross training or just coming in, you know, talking to other fighters, how cool is it to have like those visiting other fighters that you don't usually see?
Yeah, I love it because they're just, they're, you know this because you're around the community, but fighters are the most down to earth, cool people you'll ever meet. So it's great to meet somebody else. And, you know, fighting is a sport that you get humbled minute by minute. Like you are down and then you're up and you're down. And so I think you realize you're just a dude. So I love it. It's awesome. We were just going through old pictures of people that have visited our gym, and there's a thousand of them, you know, and it's some pretty cool memories. Max is one of my favorites. I love that guy.
Well, John, thank you very much. That brings us to an end of our fifth round. I appreciate it very much. I always love talking to some of the greatest minds in MMA, and I'm glad to have you on and you know, hear all about MMA Lab and you know, everything you've done.
Well, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me on.